Welcome to the B-Files. B for Brian Bonney, a well-known UFO researcher from the Canadian Northwest who covers the world, and Larry Dickin, who has been studying UFOs for 4 decades, now combined their talents with the latest reports from sightings all over the world. And now, here's your host, Larry Dickin.
Good evening. This is a premiere of a new show on the UFO Files Report that we're going to be doing once a month with Brian Vike from HBBC Research up in... Did I say that right, Brian?
Actually, it's HBCC UFO.
I always get confused on that, yeah.
Everybody does. I should have taken out one of the C's. Taking out one of the C's would have had real been helpful.
So at any rate, I'm going to let you say it again so that everybody knows what it is and where the website is.
Okay, and that is it's at www.hbccufo.org or .com or even brianvike.com. Any of them will get to me.
Okay, Brian. Well, the name of our show, we put a little moniker on it. We're going to call it, maybe this isn't too creative. We've got so many files running around here on the Jerry Pippin Show. But we're going to call it the V-Files for Vike for short. And so each month, you'll have the V-Files coming to you approximately this time each month. And I think it's going to be a fun show, Brian. Speaking of fun, I heard that you were on a station up in Chicago a few nights ago, and somebody was calling in and reporting a dead squirrel.
Oh, yes, they were. Oh, gosh. I don't know. I guess maybe I was set up. I don't know. But, yeah, I had people from the Aurora Borealis calling in and saying that there were aliens. I had other guys saying there were aliens, and they passed over our head and saying they were trying to communicate with me telepathically. But the squirrel one, here's some guy who was phoned in and says, Mr. Vike, have you heard of all these incidents of dead squirrels and mutilated squirrels down here in, I think it was Minneapolis? And I said, no. And he says, oh, yes, it's a big thing happening down here. He says, matter of fact, I even had one impaled on my car antenna. Believe this or not. And it sounds completely nuts. And I think, like I said, I was set up. But he went on to even tell me about, he said he was driving down the highway, and there was a black vehicle in front of him. Things stopped dead in the middle of the road. Two guys got out, black suits, black sunglasses, picked up a dead squirrel on the side of the road or on the road, put it through, I actually threw it in their vehicle, and then drove off at a high rate of speed. I just about fell off my chair. Mind you, I didn't last too long in the show. I hung up real quick.
I think you got set up there. Yeah, we, you know, here in the United States, we have some guys on local radio stations that think it's fun to make fun of people and call them shock jocks, and I think you got shocked, but you didn't fall for it for very long.
No, I guess I was on there after my little after they introduced me and my little spiel about, have you seen a UFO? And I said, well, I've seen something definitely unidentified, and it was an interesting, you know, sighting. And so I mentioned that, and then all of a sudden here we got a guy saying he was the alien who was traveling or flying a spaceship over top of me and trying to communicate, telling me I'm doing a good job. And I thought, oh, my God, where am I in space? Unreal. Just unreal, Larry.
Well, we haven't encountered that yet, although some of the emails we get are pretty weird.
Oh, I get my fair share, too, don't you? Oh, gosh. I don't know. Sometimes I have to actually bang myself in the head and says, boy, am I on Earth or where? It's really hard to believe that there's people, either they're just being silly, and then you get some people who actually believe it. So, you know, it's strange. It's a strange topic, and of course you're going to bring out some of the real strangeness in there.
Right. Well, you know, there's certainly lots of strange stories circulating around lately in the disclosure area. And, you know, I'm not going to go into that in any detail here because we have a whole series coming up called Inside Disclosures, or Insider Disclosures, excuse me. Because these are programs that we're going to be doing, a series of programs that's going to run pretty much all through next year.
Oh, wow.
And it's going to involve talking and interviewing with people that are involved in a number of different stories. You can see that out on our UFO section on the site. We have the Dan Burry story that we're going to be working on. I know it came to the surface last year with a big bang, but it's coming back again, and especially right after the first of the year, things should start opening up on that, at least as far as we're concerned. Huh. And we also have this strange story of the Serpo files. That sounds pretty exotic in itself.
Yep, I've had people actually write to me and talk about, is this reptilian thing?
No.
Okay.
I'm sure there's some reptilian things going on too, but these are like sort of gray species type beings, but they're not the classical grays. They just sort of look a little similar. And they come from the Zeta Reticuli system. A lot of these stories involve Zeta Reticuli. And sometimes it's the grays that are abducting people come from there, and sometimes it's other species. I mean, you know, must be a pretty crowded place.
Yeah, I think so, too.
But
maybe that's why they're coming to Earth.
Right. To get away from the crowd, right.
I guess so.
But at any rate, that's just two examples of what we're going to be getting into. We also have the tale of the tall whites from Charles Hall that we're going to be doing a report on. We have a report, the old good old classic Billy Meyer story of the Pleiadians. Going to work them all this coming year because Jerry and I think there's a grain of truth behind some of this stuff that people might consider, UFO mythology. Is they may, like all mythology, there's a basis of truth, and we're going to try to get to that truth.
Good. No, Bob, hey, it'll make for interesting listening, I'll tell you. It really will be.
So, what's happening with you, Brian?
Oh, boy. Well, Brian blew a complete gasket here just recently. Of course, I've spoken on your show about Karina Sables, who had the missing time case in Kelowna. The two lady, they went out just outside of Kelowna, Glenmore, pulled over side of the road, of course, and seen these three white lights come together and form a green when dropped on the highway. And, of course, they experienced missing timeness, burns and bruising and hospitalized one of them. And, and I'm sure everybody's heard the story. It's on your site.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Karina, she wrote to the Montel Williams Show. And because they were asking if you've had a strange experience or some kind of encounter, or you'd like to ask world-renowned psychic Sylvia Brown something, please send in your letters. So she did. And the Montel Williams Show contacted Karina straight back. I mean, it was quick. And they said, wow, this sounds like a really interesting story. So what they did is they set up for her to go down to New York. They're going to fly her down, and actually her son went with her. So they flew both Karina and her son down to the New York studios so they could, tape a show with them. And, of course, with Sylvia Brown, which shows up on every Wednesday, I believe it is, on the Montel Show. So, but before they sent Karina down, flew her down, what they did was they sent a a film crew, in other words, one man anyway. They sent him to Karina's home, did an interview with her there. Also, they went out to the location where the experience took place, and they sort of reenacted it as best they could. And I'll give credit where credit's due. They did do a good job on that portion of this, say, this interview that was going to be done on a Montel show. That was actually pretty good.
Right.
And actually, I ended up watching the show and taping a darn thing. So I do have it. I just haven't posted the clip of the show because my letter I sent out, you know, was not really in favor of the whole thing, the whole show, basically. So I figured I better watch my butt here. It's a copyright deal.
Right.
But anyways, what happened is after they aired that short bit of film on Karina's story, and it was short, they introduced Karina to the TV viewers and the studio audience, and of course Sylvia Brown, the well-known psychic. And here's Karina sitting in the audience, and first thing that came up was Sylvia Brown says to Karina, "You did encounter them. In other words, you did have a UFO experience, but you were not abducted." So here's Karina sort of sitting in the audience, and I didn't know what to say. And eventually she says, well, how did we get all the bruising on me, on, you know, on herself? How did my friend get a terrible burn on her tailbone, the bleeding nose, all this stuff going on? She says, oh, no, there was nothing invasive done to you. You weren't, again, abducted. You were just talking to these people at the side of the road. Now, you got to remember now, this is approximately 45 minutes that there was missing time. This happens to be a major, 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 major highway that runs down from Salmon Arm, Fernand into Kelowna. I mean, it's a major highway. Don't matter what time of the day, it's busy.
Right.
It's got vehicles on it. Now, if you take 45 minutes roughly, right at the side of this highway, I mean, you could. Let's put it this way, you could spit to where they were sitting on the side of the highway, onto the real highway, so onto the road, the asphalt. So
right.
They were right there, is what I'm saying. And then, so if they were there for 45 minutes talking to people that were supposed to be some kind of craft, I take it, well, you think somebody would have seen this? I mean, it was just totally bizarre. And then how, and then Sylvia Brown says, or Karina asked her, well, how did I get the bruises, you know, and all this stuff in the burn? Oh, I think you guys fell down. So I'm sitting there, holy smokes, am I listening to this correctly? And anyway, she went on, and then she went in, and Miss Brown there went into her experience in Death Valley. You know, it's the same kind of deal. She was talking to them, whoever they or them were, I don't know. But it was the most ridiculous thing I ever seen. You know, it was just so ridiculous. It's almost like a snotty, snooty attitude about the whole thing, the way she comes across. It was just ridiculous. And it was, I mean, like Karina says, she said to her, well, how did my son get a hole in his spine where you could stick your finger right down to the, almost to the, your spine, the bone in your spinal column? And she didn't answer that, of course. And of course, the triangle that was on his back with the three burn circles, she didn't answer that either. Mm. So I ended up getting, oh my gosh, I must have got well over 100 emails from people that were so upset. You wouldn't believe it. Only one person that it, I'll give credit where credit's due too. There was one person, oh, she was right on. I says, oh my goodness, give me a break. I wrote back to that person and says, hey, you have no idea what's going on in the story. Queen also asked Sylvia Brown, is this going to happen again? You know, speaking on, am I going to be taken again? She says, oh no, this is over with. Well, little does she know, it's continued on.
Right.
From that date and prior to that date, there's been a lot of stuff going on. So anyways, they said, you know, Montel turned and asked Sylvia Brown, is it possible Karina could be a beacon for, you know, these beings, you know, so in other words, where they come and snatch up individuals, you know, from time to time, the same people. And just, oh, no, she wouldn't be that. And if she wanted them, you know, to stop, basically stop, you know, bugging her, she could ask her angels, and that would pretty much cover it, and she wouldn't have any more problems.
Oh, the goodness, old grief. Demons are after her, huh?
Oh, I guess so. I couldn't believe it. It was the most stupidest thing I've heard in my entire life, and it's only because, and you know, I mean, sure, I'll be honest, I have times myself with these abduction cases where, you know, I don't know which way to turn, and I do believe a lot of them are or just something, somebody's having a little bit of problems or something. It's something doesn't feel right. If it don't feel right to me, it's a good chance it's not right. But on this case, and a lot of other ones that I've had too, some good ones, this here is a case which got a lot of evidence. I mean, people from around the surrounding area actually watched this object over the highway. I mean, something big happened. You don't lose your hair and lose weight and get hospitalized for a week, at least one of the women, over talking to people.
Right.
And like somebody else pointed out, said when one lady, the passenger who was in the vehicle with Karina, when she went to her doctor, and her doctor's, her first words out of him, basically out of his mouth was, "Oh my gosh, it looks like a radiation burn." Now, we can't prove that is a radiation burn, but it is a burn of some sort. And how do you get a radiation burn from just talking to someone? Now, as you know, a lot of cases there talk about radiation, some signs of radioactive whatever being left behind. This possibly could be one of the things that happened. Just, obviously they've had a more than just a talking at the side of the road. They actually experienced, I believe they were definitely taken. There's no question about it.
Right.
No question, in my mind, anyways.
Why, Brian, do you think that this lady who professes to be a psychic, mm-hmm. not really a UFO or abduction expert, just a plain old ordinary psychic, it says that she can read your mind and she can talk to your dead relatives or whatever, and she believes in angels and devils and whatnot. So what would be the purpose of having her on to basically put down somebody's abduction story?
I have no idea, and I really wished I knew what the whole thing was behind it, because, the lady sort of sits back in her chair up on the stage with Montana. To me, I mean, just personally speaking, she looks kind of gruff and rough around the edges, when she's talking and telling people about their, this is what happened, or that's what's happened, or, who knows what. But my goodness, when you hear something like this, on this, and then this person is giving other people advice about, their loved ones that have passed on and so forth. Gosh, when I hear all this stuff, I start thinking, is there something wrong with this whole picture or not? And, I don't know. But when you're making $700 for a phone reading for 20 minutes or so, you should come up with some better answers than that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, if you're going to have somebody on the show, Montel,
exactly.
Why not have somebody that's been involved with abductions and doing regression therapy and whatnot, and give some honest opinions from that point of view? Why bring in some woman that knows nothing and apparently doesn't believe that there's much to the abduction?
Well, it appears to me the same way. And another thing, Karina said that when they were taping the show, Montel Williams also said something to the effect, as I don't really believe in this anyway, but I noticed that that was cut out of the aired interview.
Right.
So that was kind of interesting to know that, too. I don't know. The whole thing was just, to me, was a complete shamble as far as I'm concerned. She gave the information that Sylvia Brown gave to Karina was just off, just not even close to being right on. It was so far off base, it was ridiculous. And it really did. It really bothered me a lot that, this took place. Now, Karina was actually about, maybe, would she do this again if she had an opportunity? Not with maybe with Sylvia Brown, but with someone else. And she said, "Oh yeah, I probably do." I think I might not encourage her. Put it that way.
Right.
You don't know what's going to happen and what you're going to walk into. Look, at I walked into the mutilated squirrel story. I wasn't impressed.
At least you were able to get off.
Yeah, you're right. It was a phone call. Thank goodness, and thank goodness you can hang up. I would have even pulled the cord out of the wall. I was so angry. But I just said, oh my goodness, it's ridiculous, but that's the way it goes. And this is some of the things that, are going to happen. It's just, and the thing is, when you're asked to do a radio show, you don't know, in a lot of cases, if they're new shows, you don't know what's going to happen. and you really don't. And so far, I've had really, you know, had really good folks. You guys here at Jerry Pippen Show, you guys have been great. You know, and a lot of other shows too, have been just wonderful. And then you get the odd one thrown in,
right?
Get you. Eh? Oh.
Well, you never know, Brian. You know, sometimes on our show, if you've ever listened to it with Jerry and me, sometimes you don't know what's going to happen on there either.
No, but you guys have, yeah, Bobby, you guys can have some fun and everything, but you're not completely not, you know, just being completely ridiculous about something, you know, and that's the way it came off on that Chicago show. It was just weird.
Right.
Really, really weird. But no, there's lots of good stuff happening. I think we talked about that one, or I mentioned it. Actually, I passed it on to the CCCRN, that's the Canadian Crop Circle Research Network, because they got some people out in Ontario, and there was an ice ring or an ice circle that was discovered by a gentleman in Sudbury, Ontario. Now, he found it on December 9th, and you know, had a little bit of snow around the creek and, you know, and on the ground and so forth. He said it was approximately 40 to 60 feet in diameter and had about a 1 to 2 inch deep V-shaped groove in the ice, and which is kind of interesting. It's defining the circle's perimeter, right?
Right.
And there was also another possible groove a few inches inside of the outer groove. Well, so that made it kind of an interesting one. You know, I can see that, you know, sometimes these circles can be made just by a natural, you know, phenomena. I mean, just the swirling of the water can have something rotate around, and, you know, especially where the conjunction of the water coming in and out or two sources coming in, it can circle. I've seen that before myself up here in the north. But with the grooves put in it, it makes it really strange. So there's a crew out there supposedly going to go to it and check this out and see if they come up with some answers. Now, from Paul Anderson there from Canadian Crop Circle Research Network, he said that I guess somebody was had been talking or got some reports that there was a strong, unpleasant smell had also been reported a few weeks previous in the area. Also, in around the same time frame, or just after, I should say, there was, I must have picked up about 10 reports out of Ontario. Some of them might have been the Geminid meteor shower. I think some of them were, because they did peak around that time.
Right.
You know, from the explanation that was given, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And, but I think some of the other ones were definitely unusual. Right. I mean, a lot of really bright lights being bopped around all over, doing all kinds of strange stuff. So, you know, if there's a connection to the circle, maybe, maybe not. You know, maybe the other stuff might be explainable, maybe not either. But it was interesting to note there was quite a bit of stuff coming in around that same time the circle was found.
What was the smell described as?
They didn't say. It's not in the report. And this is something that Paul just put out just recently. And all it said was a strong, unpleasant smell had been reported a few weeks previously in this same area. So they hadn't gone into it any further because they're doing an investigation. Actually, when I got the report, I contacted Paul right away. And I wanted to try to make sure that, you know, somebody could get out there, because if it starts snowing or something's going to cover it up, or if it warms up, you may lose the ring. You know, so they said they were having a few problems because it was fairly remote. I didn't think it was too remote there, but Sudbury, I didn't think it was too remote.
Right.
But anyways, hopefully they're still, you know, trying to make the effort to get out. So I hope they do and can get on it. And that'd be great to try to figure out what it is, if they can.
Well, I hope that smell wasn't that squirrel.
Might have been a half a dozen or a six-pack. Well, that's just about as bad as the crop circle up here in Vanderhoof. It was really weird, and that's going back to 2001. But when I got the call from CBC TV, because she got a call from her sister. See, it's nice to know have people in the media. It's in a, you know, you get along with them anyway. And her sister called them from CBC Radio, and what they did is they give me a show and said, "Brian, you heard about any crop circles in Vanderhoof?" And I said, "No." And I says, "Well," and she explained a little bit, and I says, "Okay, give me a little bit and I'll see if I can dig something up." 45 minutes, I had three aerial photographs and a paragraph, you know, explaining what the gentleman saw, who is Brent Mikowski, I think his name is, who saw this when he was actually flying from Vanderhoof Airport, a small one, to Prince George. So he flew right over top of him, and then he took these photographs. But it was neat to note that when I did the investigation, it was nice because I had a great field to work in. Not a soul had been in there. And then after I finished my investigation and did all my stuff in there, I ended up driving around to all the farms, and they're scattered out because, you know, some of them got some pretty good acreage. So I took off around all around the area and went to all the homes that I could and asked, you know, didn't want to tell them about the circles. You know, mm-hmm. You don't want to tell them anything you shouldn't, just for to keep, not taint the report of the case. And I asked them if anything weird happened on a certain night. And he said, well, matter of fact, there was a strong odor, a very strong odor. Matter of fact, one person said it was so strong, this elderly lady out in her garden when I was talking to her, she said, matter of fact, yeah, it was so strong that we actually ended up having to close our window.
Huh.
Really weird, eh? Real burnt, sulfury kind of weird smell. And then she said they've never smelled that before around the area at all, ever. And this of it on the same night the circles were made.
Well, you know, the reports of odors in UFO encounters, and I'm not speaking of abductions in particular, but just close encounter cases, is that there's certainly been a lot of reports over the years of this sort of sulfur-smelling odor. Describe it as hydrogen sulfide, most likely. And strange that it would come from the area of UFOs, especially when, you know, people that are abducted and taken inside UFOs, they certainly don't report anything. I mean, the air is breathable, etc. But there's something else, some other part of this phenomena that produces this sulfur smelling odor. And of course, people that are into some of the more religious aspects of this and say, you know, oh, these ETs are really angels and devils. Well, you know, the devils are associated with this sulfur smell.
Right.
And well, you know, I think that that probably comes from the fact that long, long ago, things that we would now say are UFO sightings were interpreted as being, you know, the devil's coming. Right. It had that odor, and that's where we got our legend of the sulfur smell being associated with the devil.
Right, exactly. Yep, that's what you mean. Yep. Pretty weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, you know, it seemed to affect enough. I probably talked to, oh, goodness, I don't know. Like I said, they're pretty scattered out. Probably about 8 to 10 different farms, you know, people in at the farms. And like I say, scattered. So, but all of them except for one, I think, of it did note that there was an odor that night. So that's pretty good evidence of something going on. Now, I did some, you know, of course, checking, was there any kind of plants around the area that, not plant growth or plant life, but, you know, some kind of industrial
right
plant, you know, did they have some kind of spillage, or did they release something? And there was nothing. There was just absolutely nothing, nothing that would cause that stench that night.
Right.
In that area. There's just nothing there, you know?
I mean, you know, if that happened out here, outside of my house, occasionally, you know, living here in New Jersey, I could probably explain it as something like, you know, coming from a refinery. You do get some weird odors sometimes, but it's not frequent.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to get in trouble with the Jersey Chamber of Commerce here. The air is really quite good here most of the time, folks, believe it or not.
Yeah, I know we get, I don't have to worry about it here, but I know you head to Prince George and you drive down through Quesnel and some other areas, and boy, as soon as you start getting close, boy, the air gets a little foul because you got the big pulp mills there, eh?
Right.
They're pretty they can get pretty nasty for the smell. I know we used to go out and visit a friend of ours in Prince. And you sit out in the backyard there and, you know, having a barbecue or something like that. And, oh, my goodness, if the wind's blowing right and the old plant is pumping her up, boy, I tell you, it's gross. especially when you're not used to it. But a lot of people get used to it.
Right.
So, but that's kind of cool, I guess, you know. And hey, at least people are being employed, just polluting the air. That's all.
Right.
So it could be worse, I guess, anyways. But yeah, there's a lot of, I've got a lot of stuff coming in, a lot of sightings actually. Here's a new one, it's a little tiny short one. Came in for Rancho, California, Cordova, California, actually. And this goes back, and this is all new stuff that I've received. And this went back into August 1975, 7:30 p.m. There was 8 witnesses to this. Now, here's a guy who says, a loud, deafening noise was heard overhead. It was just dusk. I looked up into the sky at the direction of the noise and seen an object spewing out blue flames and obscured in the black, darkened cloud. Only the area was illuminated by fire that they could be, you know, that they could see anyways. They could, you know, see this area because the whole thing, when it was on sort of on something whatever it was, illuminating and it was on fire, they could see that one general area and that was it. Anyways, it appeared to be a rectangular oval-shaped disc silhouette. And in distance, it resembled a meteor comet. And he said it lasted for quite a while. They watched it move across the sky for quite a while, and then it did, just disappeared and it was gone. So I don't know if it went over the horizon or was a good altitude. It was going back into 75, so it was a little hard to get info on that one.
Right.
But, interesting stuff. And that's what's interesting, too, is a lot of people, they think that we take sometimes only new reports, you know, and we're not interested in old ones. Well, let me tell you, some of those old reports are absolutely amazing, because I found here, like in Canada, it's probably the same in the United States, you go back in the 60s and 70s, boy, we've had all kinds of landings, you know, people have claimed landings of all sorts. I mean, they're just awesome cases. So it'd be nice to get them in. You can still do a little work on them. You never know what you'll dig up.
Yeah, well, we did one last night on our regular show that was an abduction report. In fact, it was the final report on the show for the night. And it's like I got into it, and I don't really pre-screen some of these reports and say, you know, I know exactly what's going on here.
Right.
And sometimes it works out good that way. You get a few surprises. Well, I got two sentences into this report, and all of a sudden it's 1975.
Right.
But it's an excellent, excellent abduction story.
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
And missing time, the whole thing. Yeah.
Yep. And that's what I find, Larry, that I think some of the better, to say, not the best cases or nothing, but some of the better ones that I have are going back a few years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like the lady out of Vancouver, 1952. You know, her husband was in the military at the time, and this took place out of Burnaby, B.C. She's inside getting some cookies and some milk and that ready for the children who are outside, her daughter, and I think she had a couple little friends over, and so they're young kids. So she gets some cookies and milk, and she'd walk out the door, and here the kids are looking up in the sky, and she says, here you go, you know, girls, and she said, well, look at that, Mom. She's pointing up, and she stood there, and she's in total amazement watching this disc-shaped object that was, hey, I mean, this thing wasn't very high, and
uh-huh.
She's just watching it. She says, I wished I would have had a camera. She did an audio report on this with me, and you know, and her husband also saw it. Her daughter to this day still remembers it, even though she was very young. She remembers just an awesome case. It's one for 52, and that was getting close around Kenneth Arnold stuff.
Right.
You know? Is it possible it might have been the same kind of thing? I don't know. Something totally different. But, you know, they're the kinds of things. I mean, going back into the 60s where I actually found some cases here around in my area, Houston. And here's that lady who comes. She was, what her job was, she used to transport prize horses and very expensive horses. Anyways, so one day, and she lives down in, North Carolina, I think it is.
Uh-huh.
So she's up in Alaska. She picks up the load of horses in her trailer. She has her dog and cat with her. She's traveling down the Cassiar Highway, and then she gets down my way on Highway 16, just ready to come up Hungry Hill, when all of a sudden, just before things started to break loose, all of a sudden the cat, her traveling companion, and a dog, the dog's hackles went up, it starts barking and howling, and the cat's going snaky all over the place and under the seat on her lap and under the seat again, and a great big bright light hits her vehicle, and it just illuminates the whole area around, including the vehicle. She says, you know, for the life of me, I don't know how the horses reacted at all. She says, I don't remember, but she remembered her pets being inside the vehicle with her. And
right.
She says she slowed down, of course, to just about coming to a stop, because here we were, she got this great big horse trailer behind her, plus it's a big truck. Where is she going to turn around? Then this is her thought. I'm going to turn around and get out of here. But she leaned over the front windshield and looked up, and all she could see was this great big illuminating light. But it did have this green sort of a ovalish shape to it, although it was just blinding her. So as she's slowing down, she comes to a stop after looking up the windscreen, and this thing, the light went off. This thing shot right to the top of the hill, and then sort of she could say, she could look, it looked like it turned, and then it shot off towards the east, towards, towards Grouse Mountain, and over and down the other side, where it illuminated the whole area behind the mountain, and eventually it was gone. And then she was just trembling and frightened, traveled on the way. She couldn't find nothing in Houston, so she made it to Burns Lake, which is an hour east of me, where there was one of the convenience stores that were open 24 hours, and she got in there, and she called her husband. And he's in the Air Force, and she's explaining to him what's going on or what just happened. And all these loggers and that are, you know, getting ready to, you know, get to the scales and everything. And everybody, she said, you could drop a pin in the store. Everybody was listening. And after she explained to her husband, got off the phone, and the guy said, oh, that's nothing. This is going on around here all the time. You know, weird. And she even stopped a police officer who had a radar trap outside of the road of Prince George, got out of her vehicle, come back, gave the officer a card, and asked and told her what happened. I guess the cop probably thought, well, she's a little bit wonkers. And she says, well, okay, you sound pretty rational. She phoned back to the Houston detachment and asked, was there any reports? And they said no, but two RCMP officers the night before seen the same thing. Very interesting case. Of course, later on, that story goes on and on and on, where, you know, there was an abduction somewhere along the way, and I think it's probably more runs in her family, because it seems like her grandmother had it. She had it. It's now into some of her children and her grandchildren. She actually was on one of her trips. She ended up driving down. Her husband didn't want her to go. She wasn't very well, but she had to go and move the horses anyway. She got down to a motel, stay overnight. She went in there. Her nose got stuffed up and that, so she blowing, started bleeding, and then she kept blowing and blowing until finally some kind of foreign object came out of her nostril. She wrapped it up, so clean, threw it in the garbage, and that's the last time she's ever had any kind of a weird encounter. Weird, eh?
Well, so they put the tracking device in there, and eventually it came out.
I know, exactly. And but you know, I do hear stories like that from time to time, where you know, people are being completely harassed, you might say, by these people, by these beings, I guess. And once something dislodges, that's the last time they have any problems at all.
Right.
You know, if the case is there is a say an implant or something, eh? I just talked to a guy just briefly about this here, and he was asking the same, you know, basically the same kind of thing. Well, you know, how about these abductees and whatnot? Do you think that they're how do you want to put that? Are they good aliens or bad aliens, that kind of thing? Well, the way I look at Larry is, hey, if someone takes you kicking, screaming out of your bed, or just takes you without your even knowledge out of your bed, it's no worse than somebody who kidnaps you, or whatever they do to you, and takes you definitely without your permission. It ain't very good.
Right.
So that's my opinion. I'm so strong, and I'm in most everything that comes in here is about 98% bad.
Well, there's something to that. Of course, we tend to humanize everything that we observe, and something that appears bad to us isn't necessarily bad to the other ET species, and that's something we have to bear in mind too.
Sure.
Of course, there's basic, probably in this universe, there's basic good and bad in everything. You know, it's the yin and the yang. It's that's just the way things are. it's a dualistic universe.
That's right.
So there is the good and the bad.
Yep.
And we have to deal with both of them. But there's also, you know, this point of perspective is that if you're an ET coming to Earth and you're studying our species and perhaps, your particular species is far, far in advance of ours, not necessarily just a few thousand years in advance, so that the technology looks rather extravagant.
Yeah.
But, sociologically and philosophically, you're not that much more advanced than we are. So, humanizing that is that you're going to have the good and bad factions, but the behavior is going to be similar. But you could get some of these species that come here and look at us, and we're like a dog or a cat or a cow.
Yep, that's right.
And they pick us up, we got every right to pick you up. I mean, you may be a sort of sentient being, but to them, it's like to us a chimpanzee.
Right. Yep.
And there's the mental, they just consider us to be just another animal.
Yep, I agree. Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah.
And all of that could be going on. That's the thing, is people want to think that there's only one scenario playing out here, and it's whatever scenario they happen to think is most likely. And I would maintain that there are many, many different scenarios going on.
That's right. Yep. And I wouldn't be surprised. I really wouldn't at all. I really do think that. I agree with you 100%.
Now, Brian, you had some interesting things. I know Jerry and I haven't had time to really get into international sightings a lot recently, and I think it would be a good opportunity because you get a lot of good international reports, and I hear you have a really great one from Israel.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting, I must admit. A UFO group over there contacted me, and actually I've talked to him before a few times, really nice gentleman, and he was telling me about a case one of the fellas from the group had worked on, and he had, of course, a witness contact him over somebody seeing something that's very, very unusual, and so he went out to investigate, and I guess when they looked around the area, well, they found something that was rather... definitely, what I would say, unusual. Here we had a circular area. Actually, he sent photographs. So there's photographs, and there's actually a video footage. Now, I was only able to get the one video clip working, but that's okay. It gives us, the idea of what's going on. But really, what happened is, it was, I think it was 1:30 a.m., the witness's daughter went out to take a shower. Anyways, they heard noises coming from the yard, and she thought that there was possibly that robbers broke into the house or something, or trying to steal a vehicle. She turned the lights on in the yard, but she couldn't see anything unusual. So the witness's mother-in-law told her the next morning that she heard the dogs barking, between 2 and 3, but they didn't pay, of course, too much attention to the dogs. I imagine they're probably barking a fair bit. Anyways, after 7 o'clock in the morning, the witness's wife went out of their home and discovered elliptical signs of imprinting in the house yard. So in other words, the backyard, front yard, the yard is assembled from hard-pressed coarse sand and small stones. Now, the woman called her husband, and he called the police because they were that concerned over it, eh?
Really?
The police sent a team of scouts, and then the police called the chairman of this UFO organization, which is ICFUFOR. Really nice fellas. Anyways, they went on and did a good evaluation of the whole thing and come up with some pretty interesting stuff. There's definitely some good photographs of something that possibly has landed. It's just bizarre. It's really bizarre. So that's something that people can go over and have a look at the whole story and have a look at the footage and photographs.
Well, this is a good example of, what people say about evidence. You know, there's no evidence. You know, it's just lights in the sky. You know, but there is a whole volume of evidence where there's physical traces left on the ground. Also, you know, examples of where trees are broken, brush is moved around, burn spots on the ground, places on the ground, circular impressions where it might be in a lawn, for example, and the grass won't grow there for 20 years.
Yep.
All sorts of examples like this.
Oh, yeah. Well, and here's another one, too, really. Okay. I've received approximately, we'll say, oh gosh, I don't know, I don't want to go overboard here, 6, maybe 8 reports from military personnel who were stationed at the Cannon Air Force Base, which is in Clovis, New Mexico, or near it anyway. Mm-hmm. And they're all, you know, basically these ex-military people, you know, were stationed in there in the, you know, mid-1970s. And I ended up just talking to a gentleman, a lieutenant colonel, with the U.S. Air Force. He's now retired, of course, and he was an F-111 pilot, and he was with the 27th Tactical Fighter Wing, and he was stationed at Cannon Air Force Base, like I say, Clovis, New Mexico, from 1973 to August 1977. Now, he had read a report on that I had just received probably a week prior to him writing to me about a security officer, an MP, at Cannon Air Force Base. All of a sudden, he gets a call from this Sergeant Witt, and saying, "Hey, we got some strange lights over the base." So he runs out and has a look, and he can see them. And there was, he said, you know, there could have been up to maybe 10, 11, 12 of these lights. In other words, objects over the base, and some of them up a little higher. But he said at some point, there were actually, one of them was so low, it was just about over top of a truck. And there was a great big giant of a guy, in other words, big build fellow, really, you know, a real teddy bear, they said, but he was a real big chap. And he said they had to, after this unknown object went over top of the vehicle, actually it hovered over it for a while, and then it left the area. When they went out to see if he was okay, they had to basically pry his hands off the steering wheel and the dash, and his knuckles were white. He was scared with fright. But anyways, in this whole deal here, this lieutenant colonel contacted me, and he says, "I didn't have any information on that, but," he said, "you might find this interesting." So he said that, you know, they usually have their intelligence briefings, you know, at the Air Force Base or any base, you know, talking about the days, what's coming up, and the days, the events and whatnot. And it's, you know, sometimes they get the security officer in there or the intelligence officer, and they're giving them a, you know, a basic briefing. So what this gentleman did, he went through his journal and he typed this up, and he sort of set the stage, and he talked about the U.S. Olympics, and he talked about one of the Pittsburgh Steelers games, and, you know, basically that kind of stuff. And then he said, what was really weird, he says, all of a sudden he says, this intelligent officer who's doing the briefing, he said there was about 48 officers there. He says, all of a sudden he pulled out a document out of his briefcase. And he says, well, for all you UFO buffs out there, and he said, and of course, this lieutenant colonel says, all the room started laughing, and everybody was talking and so forth, and he said it was a little bit hard to hear. But anyways, he said, went on to say, in July 1947, off this document now, the wreckage of what appeared to be a craft of unknown extraterrestrial origin crashed on a ranch near Roswell. Well, we know all about that one. New Mexico. Inspection by a team of qualified accident investigators concluded that the cabin experienced a rapid decompression in flight, which incapacitated the crew to the point where recovery from the resulting out of control condition was not possible. There was no explanation for what would cause this rapid decompression. Then he went on to say there were 4 to 5, and this is the briefing officer who's doing this, and he says, occupants on board of this ill-fated ship, one apparently survived for a short duration. They were approximately 4 feet in height. They're complex gray. Each of them had large eyes, almond-shaped, dark in color, a small slit where the mouth would be, and an abnormal finger arrangement at the end of their long, slender arms. They were slight of build. No evidence of the body hair was detected. Metallic pieces of the wreckage exhibited this unusual characteristic of being able to return to their original smooth form after being crumpled, or, you know, like aluminum foil, which we know about. Mm-hmm. You know, the larger pieces, cockpit, cabin, and shell were taken to the base, identified only as Summer in the southeast. And he said the bodies of the occupants were flown to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base near Dayton, Ohio, for examination, where they were placed under tight security inside Hangar 18. Then Senator Barry Goldwater, Brigadier General in the Air Force Reserve, unsuccessfully tried to gain access to Hangar 18. Now, he said that was the end of the briefing. Put the document back in and finished off something else and left. Now, he says that was the weirdest thing to bring into a briefing of a bunch of officers, you know, pilots and so forth. Weird.
Right.
You know, I mean, you know, sure, we know some of the information. That was took place in 1976. But why bring that in? It's weird. I don't understand it.
To see how they would react.
I guess so, maybe. And he also had another little experience, when I'm waiting for that one, over the, he was flying out of Nellis Air Force Base at the time, and he said in the Area 51 playground, probably just outside, but he said he had himself an experience while flying over it too in his fighter.
Mm.
So I'm really sort of waiting and in interested in seeing what's happened with that.
Right.
Lots of good stuff.
Well, yeah, did you have anything else from overseas that you could talk to us about?
Oh, there was, there was one there. There was another one here, and I can't remember off the top of my brain which that one was. That was another one that came from the Ukraine, I think it was, if I'm looking. I sometimes get these, and I post them quick enough. I read them quickly over, and then I forget what I'm doing. But anyways, this came from the Ukraine, and this is another UFO group that ended up looking at finding some ice circles. I think it was, they called it UFO landings on river, oh boy, I'm going to get this wrong, that's MZHA. Maybe you're better than I am.
No, I think you listen to my show, you know I'm not better than
Hey, I'm terrible. I'll admit it. But anyways, they sent along, that's up my website too, if you ever want to snap her up, grab her. It's really good, and this took place, which goes back some years, but I just got it on it was January the 7th, 1990. You know, the people were spotting these objects, I guess, and they landed and they left marks behind. These are these circles on the ice, but they actually did see craft this time. So, you know, and these are on these lakes that look like, well, ice rings. So actually, some of these rings are bizarre. I mean, you know, some of them you can see they just have an outer edge, you know, just nice and round, and that's it. Well, these ones here, Larry, this is a PDF format file. These circles go out, and there's grooves going out and out and out and out and out, and they're completely circular as they go out. It's really interesting.
Mm.
Very interesting. So some people might want to look at that one, too. And there's two cases of that up there. They did a really nice investigation, and it's definitely worth looking at. And if you want it, just grab it off my site. It's in a PDF format and load her up.
Okay.
They won't mind at all. I just give them the credit for it, and that, there you go. But it's an interesting case. I think your viewers might like, your readers to the site might like that one.
Right. Well, Brian, there's I noticed that, you know, we something we did post recently on our site was the interview you did with the man who, at the time, he was a very young man in Kecksburg.
Yes.
And that interview is really great, and that's, we have posted out on your page on our site. And also, we put a copy of that over on our Kecksburg story page.
Good.
You know, along with the information provided by Stan Gordon and mm-hmm. Leslie Kane, excuse me. And we have that interview there as well.
Good.
So,
yeah.
That's that event. You know, they had their 40th anniversary, it was back on the 9th, or I think it was the 8th or the 9th of December.
Right.
And that was quite an event, and it even drew some commentary, you know, from people that used to be in our government. Ron Podesta, who was advisor to Bill Clinton, and he had some commentary about the Kecksburg event, saying that this is something that really happened. It's real, and investigation should continue. And Leslie, I know, put out new information to confirm the fact that the old story that was put out by our government many years ago, that this event indeed was a crashed Russian satellite that had a nuclear reactor within it, you know, for its power source,
right?
You know, a little mini reactor. Yeah. And at the time, of course, mini reactor power sources were something that both governments were keeping very secret.
That's right, exactly.
So there was an excuse here to generate a story about recovering a Russian spacecraft with a miniaturized nuclear reactor power source on it that made some sense to the public.
Yep, exactly.
But Leslie says that she's got pretty good evidence to prove that that is absolutely not the case.
Right on, Edison. I would be interested to see that. I would be interested in seeing that myself. That sounds really good. Really does. I mean, there's so many interesting things. I mean, gosh, when you listen to that man explaining that, I mean, he explained that in pretty good, you know, fairly good detail. Even in another interview, it was explained even in more detail. But, I mean, he rattled off names and everything of people, and you know, I believe the gentleman. I believe he was in the ravine. I believe he saw what he saw, and you know, explained to us. I mean, yeah, I mean,
right.
Just too much. But it's nice to have that. And I know it was Stan Gordon because he contacted me. Well, actually, what I did is somebody had spotted. As soon as I posted that story on, I think it was a Friday night. I think it was Friday night, and late. And I posted that interview, and I guess somebody had spotted it and wrote to a radio station and says, "Hey, do you see this?" Well, I had a call the same night and asked me, "Hey, would you come on and do the show and bring that audio clip with you?" And they're going to play some portions of it. Hey, that's how much they wanted to hear that, because it was a really good, it was a good interview, at least of, you know, of the eyewitness explaining what it was that he witnessed firsthand. It was a good story, you know, and it's been going on for years. So Stan Gordon, of course, he heard it on the show, or somebody told him, better listen to the show. So he tuned in, and, you know, he heard a little bit of it, and then he wrote to me and asked, you know, could he get the guy's information? Like, he'd like to talk to him, because he has worked on it for, gosh, how many years now?
Right.
So, anyways, I made sure it was okay with Larry. He was the fellow who definitely, you know, reported this and did the interview. And he said, yes, most definitely, you can, you know, I passed him along to Stan Gordon. And I don't know if the two hooked up or not, but I'm sure they would have. You know, because Stan wanted to get a little more information if he could, which was good, because he would know a lot of stuff.
Right.
You know, because he has spent so long on it. So, you know, you just it's just another really, really, really good case, you know. And it's so funny that you get some of these still popping up. I mean, I'll get people who write me and say, you know what, I've seen that Kecksburg thing, and they'll tell me about the green fireball that went across. I just got one in here recently from a lady who said it was sort of an orange, but she wasn't claiming it to be the Kecksburg crashed object. But she says it was the same month, same, I think the whole same time, and she said she's seen a red orange type object shoot across the sky, and she says, you know, they thought it was really bizarre. And you know, after, you know, listening to the Kecksburg, that she kind of wondered, that's all, eh? But
right.
So I don't know, it from what people tell me, or some, that this object that time did change direction. So you kind of find it kind of funny for some of the things. Well, definitely the meteorite story that I don't buy, but I mean, you know, whatever it was really strange, and it was under its own power or being controlled by someone else, let's put it that way.
Right.
From the sounds of it.
You know, what I always found interesting about the Kecksburg event is, and you know, one thing that said absolutely that this was not a meteorite, that this was not even a Russian satellite falling, is the fact that this was observed over the town, and it literally changed directions before it crashed. You know, it did a zigzag movement. And, you know, following meteorites, your satellites just don't do that.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, this is like something trying to recover control when it was out of control.
That's right.
And the other interesting thing that about this particular event is the fact that, you know, we're used to dealing with sightings where if there are close encounters with the object, they're usually fairly large. In other words, we get the reports of the 30-foot large disks, you know, the big giant triangles.
Yep.
That hover over your head that are, you know, as big as a football field or bigger. And, you know, this object, when you look at it, or at least the description of it, and, you know, people actually did get measurements of it,
mm-hmm.
and that's how we know how big it was.
Right.
Is it literally looks like something that would hold one individual, and that's it.
Yep, that's right.
If you were lucky.
Yep, that's right, exactly.
It's not big.
I know, that's true. And boy, do I get those triangle sightings. Holy moly, I've been getting a lot of them in the last while, you know? And they're going, a lot of them going back a few years, but boy, are they interesting. Oh,
yeah.
Great stuff.
Well, we have one coming up. We're going to be doing an interview with a person in Tennessee. Who's somebody that Kim Schaefer talked to a couple of years ago, who had quite interesting sighting about a flying triangle that hovered right over his head, and unfortunately apparently hovered too closely because he got second-degree burns from it.
Oh, wow. Oh,
and he has quite a story to tell. It's quite detailed in the description of the object and everything else and other events that subsequently happened to him. And we're going to have him on the show about the middle part of January. So that's something to look forward to.
Boy,
and I think we got to look forward to next month's show with you, because this month we're out of time.
Yep, it goes fast, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. So, Brian, it has been a pleasure, as always, having you on our show. And this is, think of it as your show. This is The V-Files with Brian Vike.
I'm feeling like I should be in a movie now. I thank you very much, Larry, and to Jerry, too. And I'd also like to wish everybody a happy Christmas.
Okay, Brian. Have a good night.
You too. Good night, Larry.
Bye-bye.
Your text box will not go unpunished. You are in contravention of the new paradigm.